We're going to be reading the Bible now, and you can read along with us if you like. It's inside the little leaflet you got on you as you came in. The first reading is from Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from my cries of anguish? My God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer, by night, but I find no rest. Yet you are enthroned as the Holy One. You are the one Israel praises. In you our ancestors put their trust. They trusted, and you delivered them. To you they cried out and were saved. In you they trusted and were not put to shame. But I am a worm and not a man, scorned by everyone, despised by the people. All who see me mock me. They hurl insults, shaking their heads. He trusts in the Lord, they say. Let the Lord rescue him. Let him deliver him, since he delights in him. Dogs surround me, a pack of villains encircle me, they pierce my hands and my feet, all my bones are on display, people stare and gloat over me, they divide my clothes among them and cast lots for my garment. But you, Lord, do not be far from me, you are my strength, come quickly to help me.
And then on to Matthew chapter 27. Then the governor's soldiers took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole company of soldiers around him. They stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him and then twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on his head. They put a staff in his right hand and they knelt in front of him and mocked him. "Hail, King of the Jews," they said. They spit on him and took the staff and struck him on the head again and again. After they had mocked him, they took off the robe and put his own clothes on him. Then they led him away to crucify him. As they were going out, they met a man from Cyrene named Simon, and they forced him to carry the cross. They came to a place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. There they offered Jesus wine to drink, mixed with gall, but after tasting it, he refused to drink it. When they had crucified him, they divided up his clothes by casting lots, and sitting down, they kept watch over him there. Above his head, they placed the written charge against him. This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Two rebels were crucified with him, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "You are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days? Save yourself. Come down from the cross if you are the Son of God." In the same way, the chief priests, the teachers of the law and the elders mocked him. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross and we'll believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now if he wants him. For he said, 'I'm the Son of God.'" In the same way, the rebels who were crucified with him also heaped insults on him. From noon until 3 PM, darkness came over all the land. About 3 PM, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of those standing there heard this, they said, "He's calling Elijah." Immediately, one of them ran and got a sponge. He filled it with wine vinegar, put it on a staff and offered it to Jesus to drink. The rest said, "Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him." And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. Always the irony is that Christians call it Good Friday, because a man died. And that's what we're going to be thinking about today. We're going to be thinking about it today in terms of last words. Now, maybe you saw some of the videos we're putting out during the week, but, you know, last words are a thing. Sometimes last words are just this shocking statement of fact, like John Lennon from the Beatles when he said, "I'm shot." Or they can actually be beautiful last words. How about this from Arthur Conan Doyle? He was the author of Sherlock Holmes. One day he was sitting in his garden with his wife and he just turned to his wife and said, "You are wonderful." and then he died. Or how about words of regret? Last words of regret. This is from Leonardo da Vinci when he said, "I've offended God and mankind because my work did not reach the quality it should have." And I just want to say to Leo, just chill, man. I think your paintings were pretty good. Or how about this? Jane Austen, she died quite young in her early 40s. After battling disease, she said, "I want nothing but death." Now today we're looking at the last words of Jesus. And we just read before those words recorded in the Bible of Jesus' death. This is about 33 AD. It's in Jerusalem. It's the time when Israel is part of the Roman Empire. You had the trial of Jesus, if you can call it a trial. You had the torture of Jesus. And then you had the execution of Jesus by crucifixion, which was a fairly normal way of killing someone, but a very painful, drawn-out, cruel way of killing someone. But we're just going to focus on those words that Jesus spoke at the cross. If you've got it there, it's verse 46 where he says, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" We're going to zero in on that. And I just want to say some things. I want to say four things about this, and they are the cry, the my, the sky, and the why. The cry, the my, the sky, and the why. Firstly, the cry. We're told Jesus cried out. Now, it could even be translated, he screamed. One thing we should not take here is that he just raised his voice. This is a horrible cry, a scream, because of what he's enduring, because of what he's experiencing. The fact that this scream is translated into another language, which is Hebrew and Aramaic, rather than the normal Greek words all around, is just there to highlight that this is a cry we are to hear. Do you hear this cry? Do you understand this cry? My God, why do you forsake me? And it's worth thinking about, you know, wherever you stand with Jesus, whatever you think about Christian faith, how real, how historical these words sound. You know, historians and writers have made the point, you know, if you want to promote your made-up religion, you know, you'd want your religious figure, your religious hero, you know, with their last words to just sound so heroic and so sort of brave and in control to sort of galvanize and inspire your followers to go forward. But Jesus doesn't sound like that, does he? It's not a very good promo for following Jesus. And so people have said, and I reckon it's a good point, Jesus' last words fits with this idea that it just happened. He screams. And we'll get to the reason in a moment for why he screams this. My God, why have you forsaken me? And something else about this cry, it'd be natural if we think, well, Jesus is saying this because there at the cross, well, he's finally cracked. You know, at the point of his death, he's packing it in. Now that he's suffering, he's falling away from faith, he's cracked. My God, why have you forsaken me? And it's not as if we don't know that in the face of suffering, people fall away from faith. You know, people ask the question, don't they? In the face of trial and suffering, why have you abandoned me? Why have you forsaken me? Suffering is a reason people fall away from faith. And I know this will be personally for some of you, your loved ones, or maybe even yourself, you've got questions. But I'll give you an example of this. Not sure if you've heard of John Green. A bunch of books that he's written, they usually get turned into movies. He's a very good writer. But in an interview, John Green talks about losing his faith in the face of suffering. Because he grew up in church, he was very devout in his faith, he wanted to be very serious about God. So he did a six-month internship in a hospital as a trainee to become a chaplain. Now, in an interview, he talks about one particular night when a child, a three-year-old boy, is brought into that hospital in emergency who's been horribly burned. And it's just this moment in his life because he's, you know, the screaming of this boy, the smell of burnt flesh, the medical team just shouting as they're trying to get care to this little one. This trainee chaplain, John Green, ends up in this little room with the parents, fearing absolutely inadequate to know what to do. Finally, in a very weak manner, he says, "Can I pray for you?" And the mother, who's just devastated, politely declines. Also that night, John Green says he saw something he never expected, and that was one of the doctors who was there with that child later on in the break room, the staff room, was hovering over a bin because she's just vomited into that bin with what she's had to face and see. And she turns to John Green and says, "That kid's going to die." Now, in this interview, John Green said, "That was the night that my Christian faith started to fade. The pain, the suffering in the world, it just pushed him away from God. How can God be in that?" Now, I'll come back and mention John Green later on. But for now, let's just get back to Jesus, the cry of Jesus. And just to say, you know, we could say, well, you know, is this, well, maybe it's not just a quiet fading of his faith, but it's a very traumatic extinguishing of his faith. The nails are driven through his hand into this timber cross, and he's struggling for breath, and Jesus cracks it under the weight of this unbearable pain. My God, why have you forsaken me? Except that is not what's going on. That is not what's going on at all. And help us see this. Let's move on to the next thing. There's the cry and there's also the my. Now, before Wendy read from Psalm 22, this is a poem. It's a song written 1,000 years before Jesus, written by the great King David, the King of Israel. Now, this is worth noticing if you didn't pick it up as we read it, but the start of the psalm is exactly the words that Jesus says. It's exactly, he says these words, my God, why have you forsaken me? In fact, you look at the psalm 1,000 years before Jesus, but Jesus so precisely, so incredibly, he lives this psalm. He dies this psalm. Because while on the cross, you know, they mock him, they hurl insults at him, they pierce his hands and his feet, they divide his clothes, they cast lots for his garments. So when Jesus, you know, last words on the cross is Psalms 22, he's not getting out a palm card and saying some words that fit the occasion, like he's giving a prepared speech. I mean, how could he do that? These nails are being driven through his body. He's not playing a part here. No, this psalm is him. He's the psalm. From the depths of his soul, in the very midst of his pain, he's doing what he's always done, in fact. He loves. He lives out God's truth. He makes Psalm 22 become real. When Jesus screams his last words, my God, it's not him swearing. It's not him just coming out with random words of a dying man. He's saying the truth of things, my God. In fact, these words are not signs of a man who's losing his faith. It's the opposite. You know, think about this. When people want to do religious things and be religious, so often they want to do good so that sort of God will do good for them. They want to do good so that, you know, so that suffering won't come to them. But this is Jesus who is perfectly good, and it doesn't take him away from suffering. It takes him into suffering. So this moment on the cross tells us something about the relationship that Jesus has with God. You know, if I say, my Kirsty, or Kirsty says of me, my Garnet, it's not a rejection. It's the opposite. It's about belonging. It's about oneness. It's about togetherness. Jesus has always been there with God. He is the Son of God, God the Son. There's huge eternal mysteries here with Jesus. But as Jesus on the cross, breathing out his last words, he's expressing the absolute truth, the complete truth of things, that his love, my God, why have you forsaken me? So there's the cry, there's the my. Just also notice the sky. For 3 hours as Jesus hanging on the cross, darkness comes over the land. Blackness is the backdrop to Jesus' death. Now this would be a phenomena that no one would ever forget. This is not just some solar eclipse or something. This is creation. This is like the heavens, the sky, putting on funeral clothes. as it mourns for Jesus, his death. But we're about to go into the why, but just to say the darkness tells us something of the why. Because if you read more of the Bibles, the Old Testament, passages like Amos chapter 8, you'd see that darkness over the land is actually a sign of God's judgment. Blackness over the land is a sign that God's judging the sin and the corruption and the shame and the guilt of people. I know speaking about guilt is not the thing to do. Saying, you know, you are guilty, that people are guilty, might sound like doing psychological harm to people or something. But it's not harmful. In fact, it's not harmful when there's a way to have freedom and release and forgiveness from that guilt. But before God, we are guilty. There is God's judgment. Darkness comes over the land at Jesus' crucifixion. It's about this, and I'm going to say more about this in terms of the why. So there's the cry, there's the my, there's the sky, and now the why. See, Jesus cries out these last words, my God, why have you forsaken me? The horror of it for Jesus. It's not just the nails and the blood and the pain and the struggling for life. It's that his suffering and his death, his forsakenness, this forsakenness, the abandonment, is judgment from God. Not for anything he's done, but for what we've done. You know, we had that musical item before, Were You There When You Crucified My Lord? And Ming gave a really helpful explanation. It's this old-time gospel hymn. We could probably say, well, obviously wasn't there. You know, 33 AD, Jerusalem, long time before me. What's it got to do with me? But in another way, for those who put their trust in Jesus, you were there. You were there. Because that's the judgment of God on us that's placed on Jesus instead, that he died for us. Another passage in the New Testament is a good way of saying this, that through faith in Jesus, that at the cross it's our sin. We are there with him. It says this, be reconciled to God. God made him, that's Jesus, who had no sin, to be sin. That's our sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. Put it like this. You know how you can get a magnifying glass and you can use a magnifying glass to sort of harness heat and energy to create a flame as you just focus in and it does that. Well, the magnifying glass of God's wrath and God's judgment is turned on Jesus and it's just focused on him. And the good news flows to us, because Jesus gets what we deserve. Through faith in him, we get what he deserves. Righteousness of God. Now, as much as our culture wants to deny that there's such a thing as sin and guilt, we know it is. We know it's true. We know it's real. And we spend a lot of time dealing with that guilt. You know, harm that's done in relationships and broken promises and addictions and failures and all the wrong we see done in the world. We know guilt is real. We know punishment is real. We want others to be punished. In fact, sometimes we become very preoccupied with punishing ourselves. And religious people think that they can deal with their sin and guilt by being better people, but you cannot fix your guilt. But Jesus can. In love, in precious oneness with God, he was judged for us so that we can be right with God. You know, Good Friday is good because Jesus' last words at the cross was not a denial of God in the face of suffering, but in fact, his very love. And I know a whole bunch of people here this morning count themselves as belonging to Christ, they're Christians, not because they do good things, but because they just accept, they trust that Jesus died for them. Before I told you the story of John Green, whose faith started to fade because the event of that terribly burnt child, was just seared in his memory, in his mind and heart. He just could never get over it. But I'll keep going with the interview that John Green told, because he said that it just stayed with him all those years. And later on, he actually decided to Google that boy's name. He still remembered that boy's name to see what would happen, what happened with that family. And much to his surprise, he learnt that that little boy survived. And yes, he had many, many, many surgeries, but in his life, he not only survived, he thrived. And John decided he wanted to meet him, this young man who's now at college studying a degree, to just find out how life turned out for him. John Green was very nervous because, you know, didn't want to get all weird on him because, you know, this boy, the events just sort of became a turning point in his own life. But they did meet up. And in fact, John learnt that he and this whole family had become Christian. Yes, they'd gone through so much trauma, you know, life forevermore impacted, but they came to know Jesus, his love, his power, his sacrifice for them. This young man was actually keen for John to give God another go. So suffering, yeah, it can become a reason for people to turn away from God, but it doesn't have to work like that. Suffering can be the very reason for others to turn to God. See, a person can know that our suffering does not extinguish that suffering of Jesus, that great suffering, that the suffering that was even worse for us. Jesus cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why did he do it? The answer is for us. For us. Even try saying it for yourself. He went through that for me. He went through that for me. And you have to believe, you have to accept Jesus' sacrifice. You have to believe and accept that Jesus, that God's judgment for you was placed on him instead of you. But when you know that, indeed you can say, it was for me. And may you know this. And we want you to keep exploring Christian faith. Before Kirk mentioned some things that'll help you keep exploring, we'll remind you again this morning. But if you want to take the step to believe that Jesus on the cross died for you, then talk to God in prayer. Talk to a trusted Christian friend. We'd love to help you in your faith in following Jesus who died for you. And right now I'm going to pray. And if you'd like to, please join me in prayer now. Dear God, thank you that Jesus died on the cross. Thank you that in love he endured so much. Thank you that in love he went through being forsaken, judged, not for anything he did, but for us. Thank you that it was for our sin Jesus died, so that in him we can become the righteousness of God. Thank you for the cross of Jesus. Amen.